This is the Morning Mayhem with Howard Feldman and the team. The best start to your day.
Ibrahim Fakir, political analyst, director of programs at Awel Socioeconomic Research Institute. Good morning. How are you doing? Must be a very, very intense few days for you.
And it's still ongoing, Howard. I hope you will.
I am indeed. What pattern is emerging? What are you starting to see?
I would sum it up in one word. Mm-hmm. Fragmentation.
Right.
And
right.
You find that in some senses, this fragmentation may in fact be good for democracy because there is such a spread of support across different parties. If you look across the metros, and of course the metros are important because that's the driver of growth and the economy and redistribution even, if you will. And that's where the largest spread is. But Howard, when it comes to the fact that you've got such great democratic choice, the question is that going to translate into some kind of coherent approach to government? And our experience of these minority governments or coalitions so far is not very good.
No, it isn't. Mm. Yeah, if we look at Tswane as an example, really not a great success story.
Well, Tswane, Joburg, Nelson Mandela Bay, and they're all emerging as ones in which there is no clear winner. And there's no clear party which is going to be able to form government on its own. So it's almost inevitable that they have to depend on a whole range of other people. So the question is, will the maturity prevail? Will there be a different approach away from the inward-looking, insular, incremental approach that parties have taken so long? So that's the first thing.
What was it, before you carry on with that, do you think it'll make a difference? You know, when we've seen these coalitions between the DA and the EFF, which really the only thing that united them was their animosity towards the ANC, isn't that a little bit different where you might see a coalition between the DA, for example, and Action SA, where, yes, of course, there's past history in terms of personalities, but actually largely are on similar pages.
How that's true, but remember, most coalitions around the world are not always between parties which are like-minded. Sometimes they are parties which have very disparate approaches to certain things. But take Germany, for example. In Germany, the approach of the parties to coalitions is that they are often underwritten by coalition agreements, and those coalition agreements are sometimes governed by law. The same is true in, say, a country like Israel, where you would know sometimes you have coalitions formed by governments or parties.
The current coalition, which seems to be working there, is one of the most surprising of all. You've got a right-wing prime minister. You've got representatives of the Arab parties, and you've got what seems to be a bit of a centrist left, and yet it seems to be functioning. So I hear your point.
Right, and there's two or three things which underpin that approach, right? Mm-hmm. The one is a level of maturity of the leaders to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. We can't always say that that's a blanket thing when it comes to politicians. The second is that apart from a coherent maturity, there is some kind of coherence around two or three principles, key principles that they all commonly agree on, and that's what they focus on instead of the other things that they all want to do individually, right? So it's moving away from the kind of incremental advantage, rational, active type approach that is only good for their parties. So they move away from that approach. And the third is that underlying the common sort of coherent principles around which they cohere and a degree of maturity is that they set out a minimum program of what they want to achieve, even if it be in the short term. And we haven't had that characterize our coalition agreements so far. It did happen in 1994 when there was a government of national unity, but we knew that that broke down at some point. Now, I'm not suggesting that we need that kind of approach again, but we do need a degree of maturity, and we do need these guys to think about a set of principles, two or three, not too many, that they will want to agree on and pursue for the next 3 or 4 years. They also have to realize that anything that they do now to work together is not cast in stone and forever and ever. Amen. It is about a temporary arrangement in which you're going to work together for 5 years for the good of society. And I think the lesson, if they don't take the lesson now from what voters have been telling them through the big stairway, then they'll never get the lesson.
Mm-hmm. In terms of how we've seen some of the parties performing, you know, obviously there's a lot of bluster on social media. It's hard to always cut through the noise. Everybody trying to convince us of something that we're actually seeing, but they don't want us to see. But what is your, if we can just go through ANC, DA, EFF, and Action SA, how have they each performed?
Howard, before I answer that, let me just make one small disclaimer. And that disclaimer is, I know it's tempting and it's nice for us to know this because we think this is a precursor to 2024 and the next election, or it's a referendum on the ANC, etc. And it isn't. Let us understand that this is about 250 different municipalities. So in effect, we've had 250 odd elections going on. Nevertheless, there are important trends which are emerging, despite what I've just said. The first is that the ANC remains the largest party, like it or not. Even in the metros, there is still a significant presence of the ANC. They still hold representation and clearly the aspiration for many voters, despite the fact that the large core of their voter support base stayed away. Which means that, you know, even from the point we're talking about, perspective of coalition governments, it will be hard now to imagine you can take the approach of saying we'll construct governments by simply leaving the ANC out. Firstly, it's counterintuitive democratic principles because they would need to be included. So let's hope that that trend will reverse itself and that the trend of exclusion of winner takes all, of simply keeping one party out, is going to come to an end. Because look, if you do have the bigger share of the votes, then at some point you should be reflected in the way in which the government is composed. So hopefully they'll move away from this winner-take-all executive approach, and there will be some kind of proportional representation, some kind of proportional inclusion, even if token, of the larger parties. And that would apply to, say, for example, the DA, in a place where the DA is the leading party, that they would be magnanimous enough to include and be included. So the ANC remains the largest party. The DA, contrary to the way in which the media covered them, and the media gave them blanket negative coverage. Let's make no mistake
about
it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
You know, the EFF was given uncritical coverage. The ANC, the coverage was a bit balanced. They were justifiably lampooned and criticized and ridiculed, justifiably so. But even their mundane messages and key campaign messages were covered. But anyway, people expected that the DA would perform much worse. I think there'll be a few losses, but they'll be very small. And by and large, they will hold and maintain the pattern that they will recover from 2019, put it that way. So they've performed moderately well, and the knives won't necessarily be out for John's GNAs, and let's put it that way. The surprise performance, of course, is Action SA. In some cases, even beating semi-established party like the EFF. And then there's the story of the EFF, which is not that fantastic. And perhaps they need to realize that by and large, they appeal to simply a core tribe of voter supporters, and there's no real great prospects for growth. Doesn't look as if people go for that kind of politics.
Well, it was interesting because we gave all of the parties an opportunity to talk to us and the one party that I couldn't get into a real conversation with was the EFF, because I found it was all about we will win and our soldiers are out there and are we ready and you'll see and we're going to do, but we couldn't talk about issues, whereas most of the other parties we could talk about things that they were passionate about, that they believed in, and that they, and whether people liked it or responded to it was absolutely their choice. But the one conversation that I really did struggle to have in terms of meaning in anything substantive was the EFF. I found it all to be about the drama of the EFF, but there was nothing more to it.
Well, that's my reading of the style of politics when it comes to the substance of their politics.
Separate
what your experience was and we just say, well, if we're generous and say that was just their style, let's look at the substance. It looks like the politics of vengeance and retribution and that kind of thing is not what South Africans are going for. But there are big lessons out, and I think we shouldn't take this too lightly. That if you look at the pattern of support for political parties, it looks like the social attitudes changing, becoming much more inward-looking, much more insular. People are voting for parties which they think are the, in inverted commas, of their tribe, of their political identity. Except perhaps for Action SA, which appears to have had across the board appeal, and to a limited extent the DA and the ANC have slightly broader appeal. But by and large, there's this kind of insularity. And in society, that means that the ability for coherence, the ability for cohesiveness and a solidarity project across identities may start to now become slightly more difficult. And in that sense, I think it is very important that when the coalition governments or other governments are formed, that the process of saying we won and we're going to exclude you is not one that will be adopted, because there's still an opportunity for leadership to show that even though the voting pattern support patterns are showing this kind of identity fracturing, we can, because of our leaders, because of who is going to represent us, we're showing that we can take a leaf in which we can cooperate rather than work to destabilize and destroy.
Could it also be that in the last election, the need for coalitions or the possibilities that coalition politics brings came as a little bit of a surprise in a way? Now we've had 4 years to get used to that idea and pretty much accepted way ahead of the election that this could be a reality. Could that bode better for us?
It could, but I think you've been a bit too generous with how you're thinking.
I'm trying to be a bit positive here.
How you thinking political party leaders and their supporters and officials are going to take a leaf out of this book and reflect and be slightly mature? Look, I mean, I'll join you halfway along this journey of optimism. but you know, the halfway point, I'm gonna say, I'm sorry, Howard, I retain a little bit of cynicism. And I think that, you know, so I'm not being completely skeptical. I'm not being completely cynical. I'm just being slightly skeptical to say, you know, part of democratic vigilance is that we've got to keep an eye on these guys. Let's not think that they're going to learn the lessons that the rest of us think we learned from the surprise we got in 2016 and suddenly they're reflecting. Because I will give you one example. You know, the results come out, the patterns start emerging, all right? And what do the parties say, including Herman Mashaba? Oh, no, our election campaign for 2024 starts now. Well, you haven't yet even composed any councils. What are you talking about? You know, first govern, and this is part of the problem. Politics and government is not just about capturing political power. It's also about administering it, managing, and using it to do certain things in that period. Then you go on and campaign later on, sure. But if you govern, whether you're in government or you are in opposition and you perform vigilant oversight, you extract accountability, you be responsive to your constituencies, you may not need to campaign as hard the next time out. So they need to, they really do need to stop thinking about their parties and their party interests in the immediate term and think about the broader public interest, because in part, when thinking about the broader public interest, you'll also be automatically thinking about what would be good for you come the next election.
Absolutely right. Ibrahim Fakir, I could chat to you all day, but I'm not allowed. So this is where we have to move on. Thank you as always. And yep, let's see what happens. We'll get you back once the dust has settled and we can have a look at how things hope to look forward. It is 8:28. I'd love your reaction on 34519 or 061 895 1019.